Call the meeting to order. I'll please rise. Our city administrator will lead us in the pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call. Councilmember Lawson?
Present.
Councilmember Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Ingram?
Here.
Councilmember Mutzler?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Here.
Okay, all present accounted for. Good job, Council. Okay, next up is our public comment period. This is where you can come to the podium and speak on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. We have three public hearings and a couple more agenda items, so you could talk on something that's not on tonight's agenda. You could tell us about how great the Girl Scout cookies are. What flavors are the best sellers? So, would anyone like to address the council for the evening? I'll give you your chance. This is marketing at its best. No? Nobody wants to address the council? Okay, we had a chance. Buy some cookies. Like there's three people who may take orders. Okay, the consent agenda, council, is before you.
Move to commit, submit.
Second.
I'd like to have one item pulled.
Okay.
That would be the appointment of the new planning commissioner.
Okay.
We'll
pull that agenda item. We were planning on announcing her after you approve her, but we can pull it then.
Oh, that'd be fine. Gary, that's fine.
Okay. So we're going to leave the consent agenda as is. I have a motion and a second.
Yes.
Okay. All approve, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. So, Council, I'd like to bring a person up to the podium to introduce our new member of the Planning Commission. So, Rebecca, she's there. Council, before you is Rebecca Czar. Rebecca has applied for the Planning Commission in the past and then agreed to serve on our Parks Board. She's been our Parks Board Chairman, has done a great job through a difficult Parks Master Plan. Still is continue to attend the next meeting because she still wants to finish the bylaws. And so this is Rebecca, and I think she's going to do a great job on the Planning Commission. Comes highly recommended, and I'll see if she wants to say anything, then we'll give her a round of applause. So Rebecca, any speeches for the night?
I'm excited.
Okay, a round of applause.
So I've got to I have to tell her one thing that she has to be aware of, that the word has already gotten around that we now have a planning commission czar.
Don't leave me like that. Councilperson Mutzler.
This is the first time I've met Commissioner Czar, and I really appreciate your resume. And what I really like about it is your appraisal experience, because one of the humbling things for me as a council member is to know that my vote here affects the property values of people's property. And for some reason, it seems like it's generally negative, not always positive. So I know you appreciate that, and I appreciate you being on the Planning Commission.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll still see you at the Parks Board meeting.
No escape.
Okay, thank you, Council. That was a good job. Okay, next up is capital projects. I'm sure there's some information we'd love to know. Janice, we're going to have Katie again. Welcome, Katie.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Okay, so project updates. I'll start with Main Street. We have suspended the project for wintertime due to wet weather, cold conditions until spring, so we can place a final lift of asphalt. I sent out an email to council and staff, but we are awaiting installation of the streetlights. Into Light should be getting to that this week. Hopefully those will be installed by the middle of this month. We had a little issue as far as delivery of the materials, so that's what the delay was. So I apologize for the misinformation and the delay in getting those installed. We will be moving forward with a landscape contract of some sort to install street trees. So we're working on that in the new year. We are also the project inspector, and then Bo Westford on our public works maintenance staff, and myself, we walked the job, and we're developing a punch list so we can provide that to the contractor before spring so we can get working on those little remaining items that are outstanding. And again, paving in the spring. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about Main Street.
It's looking really good.
Looking like a road. Yeah.
Any idea when spring?
March 21st. Yeah,
yeah.
March
July 21st. 5th.
Yeah. Before we can predict that exactly, you have to.
If you can predict the weather, the spec says that it needs to be 45 degrees and rising, and it has to be absolutely dry. So even if you have like a heavy dew, the pavement has to be absolutely dry. Otherwise, you risk the two layers of asphalt separating and delaminating.
Dry
so
for
just dry when you put it down. So
April-ish, May-ish, June-ish,
July,
August,
sure.
Spring comes around. That hasn't happened. Mm-hmm.
Whenever the weather will be conducive, and I think it'll take about 3 days to get that top lift down. So three days of good weather when we know it's going to be a consecutive nice days. So sorry, I can't. My weather predicting abilities are not very good. Next on the list, let's talk about Thornton. So we are working on obtaining right-of-way for Thornton, and this is Thornton from Vista to Maureen, I believe, or just a little bit west of Maureen. The city got some grant funds to rebuild the road and do some utility. We'll do some utility improvements, water, sewer, that sort of thing, install sidewalks. And create water quality facility via rain garden. So we are working on getting right-of-way at this time. Wendy LaRocque has been working with the school district to obtain the right-of-way that we need, or at least an easement to be able to install the water quality facility. And here in the next few weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to send out letters to adjacent property owners. We actually have sufficient right-of-way in that area. But just to let people know, hey, this is on the radar. We're going to start construction in, once school lets out, and let them know what the impacts are going to be on their frontage. So design is also underway, and we're working on the permitting necessary. We do have federal funding for this job, so there's different permits that need to be acquired. Quick version of that. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Oh. Councilperson Watson, then Ingram. So Councilperson Watson.
Katie, when are you looking to start the Thornton? Is it so as soon as school's over?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Correct. Thank you. Because there'll be an impact to the school. So.
Councilperson Ingram.
Are we going to divert traffic through the school parking lot? Is that our plan?
That's not our plan. I don't think, it's private property, so you can't really put public traffic through private property.
Any further questions? Okay. Next.
Next on the list is Vista Drive. So the city was also successful in getting funding for resurfacing Vista from 2nd Avenue to basically where the roundabout project ends. So that will include, pavement restoration, redoing the pavement, and then ADA ramps as necessary. Right now, the city's looking at the utilities. You don't want to frost the cake until you make sure that the cake's decent, so you don't want to cover over old utilities if they need to be fixed. So that's what we're doing right now. And both the Thornton and the Vista project, by the formation of the TBD and having those TBD dollars, really allowed us to be able to get those grants, and Janice is very successful in getting grant funding. And so we're also working on getting some signs put up, actually prior to construction, to basically tell the public this is an upcoming project because of the TBD dollars. So we have for Vista. Any questions about that?
Councilperson Watson.
Will you have to close the road? I'm just wondering for Street Festival, because we use so much of that area. Will you have to close the road for 3 or 4 days? Or?
I don't have an answer for that.
Okay.
Right now.
As long as you don't do it for Street Festival weekend.
Road will be closed for everything but Street Festival.
Okay.
Old Settlers Parade.
Got that on tape.
Old Settlers, although Old Settlers just today only crosses Vista Drive. They don't actually, the parade doesn't come down Vista Drive.
but the access to the high school could get interesting for the pre-parade. But we're fortunate we have a year and a half to kind of plan that. So Old Setters just needs to be aware.
I thought it was this year.
This summer, actually.
It's this summer.
You're doing it this coming summer?
Yeah.
Oh, so Thornton and Vista at the same time?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they were a year apart.
No. They got grant money. It's
wonderful. Oh, I know that they... Yeah, okay. We'll work on that.
Yep. And then finally on the list is Church Road. So we have actually completed the necessary rights. I've talked about this before, to construct the project. In order to meet the requirements of our federal funding, we need to have the right-of-way certified. Basically, the feds look over our paperwork and say, yeah, you did what you needed to do. So that's all done. Right now, we're working on closing out the Public Works Trust Fund loan because that was a requirement of that loan to get the right-of-way acquired by the end of 2012, which we did. So we're working on that closeout paperwork. So next on the list is to secure adequate funding for construction. And we are also in the very early stages of letting the utility companies know, the dry utilities, the power, phone, cable, that sort of thing, that's all overhead in that area, letting them know that that project's on the horizon and hopefully trying to get it worked out so we can get those utilities moved ahead of construction, maybe even this year. So we're starting in on those discussions. Questions?
All right. That's
it? That's all I got?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Anxious to see those lights. Okay. Next up, our first of three public hearings. Our community planning director, Yori Burnett, will start number one with townhomes.
Okay. On capital projects, police station. Any updates of where we're going with that?
Yeah, we're right now we're just, again, wrapping up just some minor things. We're going to be probably at our next committee meeting starting the discussions about, what we want to do with the funds that are left over, the Lego improvements. But really nothing. This time of year, as you know, things are kind of slow. And with the project really winding down to minor things, it's just kind of...
So next committee will know the actual amount and decide what to do with the excess funds.
Okay.
Under budget still, though. Okay. Thank you, Yuri.
Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Last year, 2012, you considered over 20 code scrub items to the Ferndale Municipal Code, and we're going to keep on going with those until we're ready to start changing the ones that we changed last year. So the first three that we have this year, the first of them is townhomes. What we're proposing to do is place townhomes or single-family attached dwellings as permitted uses in both the residential office and the multifamily RM1.5 zone. Townhouses are a very popular development style right now. They are, as I said, considered single-family units where a tenant could actually own the individual units. Unlike traditional multifamily where they are tenants within a larger complex. They're defined separately by the building codes, whereas multifamily developments are under the International Building Code. Townhouses are under the International Residential Code. For someone just walking by, there might not be any difference apparent to them as far as this is a townhome or this is multifamily. We have allowed, as a staff policy, townhomes to be built in our multifamily zones, even though a strict interpretation of the code would suggest that they are not allowed because they're not multifamily development. What we're proposing to do is to change our code to reflect our policy and to reflect what we've always done, and that would be to continue to allow townhomes within the RO and RM1.5 zone. We're also proposing adding a definition for them so that there's no misunderstanding and requiring that there be no less than three attached units together. That way, again, it preserves that multifamily look and feel. We've run it through the Planning Commission. They supported it. I believe they said that they felt it was a no-brainer I don't know if it's a no-brainer necessarily, but we do have a public hearing coming up, and then you'll get to decide.
Okay, council's questions for staff. Remember, it's a public hearing, so technical question, not opinion statements. Councilperson Goodrich.
If you're saying three, no less than three, what's the difference between that and a condo of three units?
There really wouldn't be any difference as far as looking at it. The reason why we said three or more is so that you can't just have the two together, which would then really be a duplex. We wanted to make sure that it wasn't a townhome that really didn't fit the intent of the zone. So that's why there was three, which is the same definition as multifamily development, three or more.
But there's no difference between a townhome and a condo.
There really is no difference as far as a city land use perspective. There's a slight difference, or maybe it's a dramatic difference, as far as whether or not you can purchase it separately, but that's not something that we as a city would concern ourselves about.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Isn't, however, just the last thing that Councilmember Goodrich, a townhouse is straight out, forward. I mean, it's... there's nobody above you, nobody below, but a condo could have somebody above you or below you.
The traditional condo that we think of, that is the case, but you can have a condominium that looks like a townhouse. So we're talking about...
The two-story ones that Perel built.
Those yes.
Those are condos, but they're two-story, single-family two-story.
The real difference that we're talking about as far as code is exactly as Council Member Mutchler said. It's a type of construction where a townhome is from the ground floor up to the top, one single structure, and then there just so happens to be another structure right next to it. It could be condominiumized, or it might not be, but the basic thought process behind the building codes is the way it's built. From the ground to the sky, it's one unit.
Councilperson Hansen.
So if I wanted to build a duplex townhouse in a multifamily zone, and I wanted to sell them, I wanted to have a zero lot line so that they could be sold as condos, I couldn't do it. Is that correct?
You could do that in theory, but you would have to go through the subdivision process through the city to do that, where they'd have to have their property lines shown on a plat map in order to have that separation in there.
I guess my question relates to the fact that you can do three, but you can't do two, because three is the same thing, is it not? It's essentially three townhouses connected, and but we're saying minimum of three. The reason I bring it up, I'm aware of a lot of communities, East Coast, if you will, and around it, obviously have townhomes, but they also have duplex homes that are zero lot line. Essentially, they are condominiums for two people or for two different owners. They're on a single lot. Do we have a provision anywhere in our code to allow that?
Yes, and we're not changing it. Under permitted principal uses, under B, we have duplexes, and then under C, we have the townhomes. So duplexes are allowed. This wouldn't change it. So what you're proposing they could do, they could build a duplex. If they wanted to build a townhome, then they'd need to build three or more. The basic goal of the way that it's written is so they can't just build one single family. They could build two, they could build three, four, five, six, et cetera.
I think you've answered my question, Yori. I'm not sure, because the word townhome on the East Coast, townhome could be two, three, or six connected. They're row houses is what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want to prevent some entrepreneur that wanted to have some nice duplexes and be able to sell each half. I guess that's the key. Can be able to condominiumize a duplex and be able to sell each half, whether it's two stories or not.
I don't see why they wouldn't be able to do it through the subdivision process. Again, if it's a short plat, four lots or less, that would be staff approved. If it was more than four lots, then it would go through this body. The way in which it is defined, and I believe that this is the exact same definition that the International Residential Code has for townhomes, and again, they put it into a little different, here's how you build a townhome, here's how you build a duplex, is they define it as three units or more that are attached. So you'd be able to do all of what you're talking about. It's just that for
all
this,
under a different category.
It does, yeah.
Councilperson Ingram, and
well,
Councilperson Goodrich.
Excuse me. All right, this is probably a thing. I don't even know if we want to get involved with this. We go back into our design standards ordinances. Some cities where I've been delineate townhomes from condos by color code, if you will. In other words, if you've got a row of townhomes, every individual townhome changes color at the common wall. And that's how you can drive down the street and say that's a townhome. And if you look across this street and they're all the same color, those are condos. I don't know if there's any advantage to that. I don't know if there's any. Do we want to get into that?
It's usually done by covenant, Paul.
Yeah.
By the covenants of
CC&Rs
the
CC&Rs of the
developer.
Yeah. So, anyway. Did that make any kind of sense?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Staff respond.
Absolutely. I don't know as far as necessarily our ability or our desire to do that as far as separating condos versus townhomes, but that is something that we've talked quite a bit about, is multifamily design standards. The old, communist era blocks that you see, I don't think that anyone, including many of the developers or contractors behind me, really like those. But often when push comes to shove and it's incrementally cheaper to buy one can of paint than several, that sometimes occurs. But I think that's something that we could talk about over this next year is, do we want to have design standards for multifamily outside of the downtown zone? And paint schemes is something that's come up. And I'm sure the folks behind me could put in their two cents as well.
Well, it goes to, we've talked about still going forward with residential Eagle. So
mm-hmm.
Actually a good point to bring up. Councilperson Goodrich, Zimmerman, and then Mutchler.
I'm still confused looking at this, and I was looking on page 41 here of the handout, which is 18.36.020, permitted principal uses. And if we're permitting single-family dwellings, duplexes, multifamily, park or playground, daycare, and municipal uses, why are we differentiating or pulling out townhomes and all that? Because, and I'm looking over here, and Corral is an RO zone, and we have single-family houses, and we have multifamily condos. I don't know how you want to, which could be considered townhomes because they're all single, blocks.
There's a really good answer for that.
So I'm confused at how all this works together.
On or around September 4th, 2006, and you can see this on page 41 in subsection A there, mm-hmm. The city council, I believe correctly, saw that a lot of our multifamily zones, which had previously allowed single-family development in them, were being developed for single-family uses. Not Corral, but you have Mountain View Meadows just up the way. You have LeBounty Estates down on LeBounty, which are single-family developments within the multifamily zones. So what the council did back in 2006 was say, okay, you guys are vested. Those that have already developed single-family, you're vested, and you can continue to develop on those existing lots. But we're not allowing any more single-family development in these zones, which made sense. However, it inadvertently wrapped in townhomes into that, where if you look at the black and white of the code, townhomes are considered single-family development per the building code. And our code says single-family are not allowed unless it was built before 2006. So what this is doing right here is reintroducing townhomes back in, or single-family attached dwellings back in, saying we don't want...
That's what C is doing?
That's what C is doing. It is really in a response to A that we're then creating C.
Okay.
And by the way, we never stopped allowing townhomes because we felt that the intent of council was probably pretty clear. This is just coming back in and saying, probably should have done this 7 years ago. Now we're proposing to do it today.
Councilor Zimmerman?
Maybe just to clarify a couple things. The condominium real estate law is a whole separate area of expertise, so somewhere you might want to reflect it, because when you get into townhomes, you're talking about a fee simple purchase of vertical airspace versus condominium law, where you just own a layer of the real estate that goes to however high we say. So,
very good point. The condominiums, we don't know who's condominiumized or who's not necessarily in commercial, residential, industrial. We don't need to know because it is a totally, it's not necessarily land use. It's a little bit different.
Councilperson Metzler?
So this is a definition question. We've got lots of real estate people here, so Mike. If we have four or five units with shared walls and they go straight out, okay, we're calling those townhouses. Two scenarios, one where I own the land under me and the sky above me. I own that. And it's literally a zero lot line, no setbacks, I'm connected. What is that called as opposed to the five of us share the land and share the maintenance and the responsibilities? It seems like those are two different stories. Are they called something differently? Different.
They are, and I think that maybe Ron York, if not others, might be able to answer it a little bit better just because...
And are both those allowed in the two zones?
Mm-hmm. But both of those are allowed. It ultimately becomes much more dependent on what the original property owner wishes to do with them. And, in fact, after they're built, it could modify the way that it acts if the property owner wants it to. It could be built as a straight-out multifamily where the property owner retains control of everything and owns the units within them. And then when the market changes, they might determine that, in fact, they're going to condominiumize it and sell that airspace in between. Not something that we would necessarily ever know about or need to know about. As long as the bills are still paid and as long as it's still maintained, then we're good.
Are you requesting maybe a more different answer from a constructive
person?
Well,
in my mind, I know we have four single-family homes. We require setbacks. I don't recall, we require setbacks, 8 feet, whatever. So could a developer come to Ferndale and build townhouses and sell them individually as an option if you wanted to do that? And that guy owns that little piece of yard in front, little piece of yard back. Is that something we can allow a developer to do?
We can allow that to happen because the construction necessary for a townhome is, I don't want to say necessarily more complex than multifamily, and it may well be, but it is designed to internalize those fire separations. So there's more of a fire separation between those two units because there's no space in between them than if there was the 16 feet that we'd normally have between them, where a fire can't leap 16 feet. A fire can leap through a wall, and that's why they're designed, that they're built a little bit tougher to withstand that. So once that's done, once the building code says, okay, this is built to withstand what should happen, then they can do a lot of different things with it.
He could then sell piece after piece after piece.
That's what Grill is.
Okay.
Grill's all
individual. So you don't share the land and the maintenance of the whole land.
We share the maintenance of the land, but each person owns their unit.
It's been designed for that eventuality to possibly occur. Once our inspector's out, things happen, and it's been designed recognizing that those things could happen.
Okay, any more that you'd like to present?
Nope.
Okay, any more questions or council before we go to public hearing? Okay, we're going to go to the public hearing phase, and I'm going to read the speech about public hearings, and this is the same speech that will recognize our three public hearings to save some time. So if anyone has a question about that, they can ask about it later. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in the decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it is necessary that you sign in on the sign-up sheet that would be available at the counter located in front of the chambers. We're not really formal here. If you haven't signed up and you'd still like to speak on the subject, raise your hand and we will find you. Written comments will also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum, the microphone, and clearly state your name and address. Your address is optional. If you are speaking as a representative for another person or organization, so state. State whether you're a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comment to 3 minutes after all comments are heard. If you have something to add that has not already been stated at the discretion of the mayor, you may be given an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during or at the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter into a regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear as an agenda item for council discussion, decision, or referral. The audience may not comment during the council's deliberations unless questioned by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing, give every person an opportunity to be heard, and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising the right to free speech. So the sign-up sheet on townhome is empty, but that doesn't preclude us from asking anyone if they'd like to speak. So if you'd like to speak, one person has risen there. So great, you're it. Come forward, please. Who are you? We've never seen you before.
Sorina Rebecca Czar, 5732 Vista Drive. So I can clarify the townhome thing for you, actually. So the same building can actually be three legal uses. You can be multifamily, which is one owner owns the land, and he would essentially rent each of those units. Or the association can own the land and sell off condominiumized units, or you can actually divide the land underneath, and those would be single family. But you have to do short plat or long plat to do that. So same building can be those three legal uses.
Any questions for Rebecca? Yes. Person Musler?
And I could call all those a townhouse.
Yes. Townhouse is just a style, visually, almost like a two-story.
Okay. Any more questions? No? Thank you. Anyone else like to speak on townhouses? Okay. The mayor made a mistake, but I corrected myself. At 6:31:52, we opened the public hearing. So seeing no other speak, we will close the public hearing at 6:32:44. And I saw Councilperson Hansen's hand up first.
I move that we pass Agenda Bill 1301-002 relating to the amendment of the code for townhomes.
I saw Councilperson Mutchler's hand up right after that, so are you the second? Okay, it's been first and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none, all signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up, the public hearing on Church Heights.
Hey. This one is one of the more simple code changes that we've proposed as far as text being changed, but possibly one of the more potentially complex as far as previous history and the can of worms element that there could be. So I'm going to go for the simple and let you go to the complex if you'd like. Cities are restricted from and piercing the boundary of church and state when it comes to religious institutions or organizations' ability to worship in the way that they believe that they must. Where that comes to a potential head here is when the city, as it does now, has a prior restriction on the height limit for religious institutions. We say that churches, which are allowed as conditional uses, churches approved by conditional use shall be allowed a maximum height of 35 feet. That's what we say right now. We're proposing to remove that language, because, as I said, it does create a prior restriction on religious freedom, something that, that we as a jurisdiction cannot do. There's a lot of background on this locally where a church at one time over the last decade wanted to build a church steeple. The city initially said no, that you cannot build an overly tall church steeple over 35 feet. But then after receiving a memorandum or complaint from other religious institutions locally, sought advice from the city attorney, who did acknowledge that, in fact, the city cannot have that sort of restriction. We've then followed up recently with the Municipal Research Services to confirm that that is, in fact, the case. Really briefly, what that applies to is the religious elements of these religious organizations. It doesn't include a storage shed out back. It doesn't include necessarily like a cafeteria or dormitories or anything that might be part of a church. It is the element that has a religious significance to it, the church steeple, the cross, so on and so forth. There is no development application on the horizon. This is a code scrub item that, despite the fact that we had it resolved or explained to us by our legal consultant several years ago, we never made that change. Simple and straightforward as far as the text change. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Council, technical questions of staff. So I'm going to go on that direction. So Councilperson Olson, Ingram, and then Goodrich.
But as we discussed in committee, Yori, there's still could be a limit. They would have to apply for things. You couldn't have a 600-foot tower and a flight path or something like that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. The city can attach reasonable restrictions. It has to go through the conditional use permit, and the question came up today, FAA or something like that. That trumps. You have First Amendment rights, but you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Thank you.
Councilperson Ingram.
Well, it's just one of my internal quirks here. When I saw this on the agenda on the committee, I thought, Church Heights, are we getting a new plat up on Church Road? That's kind of the way we word things. And I'm sitting there going, well, we should have worded that height of churches or something. It kind of messed with my head for a while.
It's a very tall hill. You don't want anything big on the hill.
Well, it's just that I thought it was a new development.
The ambiance.
We're glad that we confused you.
I know. I'm easily confused.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Today I called Yori to open up one of those possible cans of worms in regards to this, because I had a concern about church tower / steeples becoming cell sites. And the reason I brought that up is the church I was a maintenance director on, we had a 90-foot tower with a 10-foot cross on top of it. We were the highest thing in the city. All of a sudden the cell companies found it and said, hey, can we put some antennas in your tower? And it ended up having to go to the city. The city had to address the code issue of aesthetics with that and some other issues that were associated with that. The cell companies liked it because they didn't have to go out and build a tower and go through all the permitting and things that are necessary for building a tower. The tower's already there. They could stick their antennas in it. It was a good deal for the church. It brought in another $1,300 to $1,500 a month per user. They ended up with two cell services in the tower. It was tall enough. So that was the thing I brought up with Yori is, are we protected against something like that happening at John's church or something?
The cell towers
some extra income.
Boy, Councilman Goodrich, that fight has already been fought in the state of Washington. You can see the example of that just before you drive into Northgate, a church right along I-5, and that battle has been fought and lost. So,
the tower
has a church symbol on top.
Well, just for reference, you can drive through most of North California. You'll almost never see a cell tower, but you'll see a lot of church spires.
Jesus died to give you four bars of coverage.
Well, one of the things I said to Councilmember Goodrich is towers also require that conditional use. And we do have a number of restrictions, especially in the single-family zone, that, unless challenged, would probably limit them so that we don't have a huge 100-foot tower. I can't say, never say never, but...
Okay, any more technical questions of staff? Okay, we'll go to the public hearing at 6:40:15. Anyone from the audience like to come talk about the height of church steeples? Seeing no enthusiasm for that subject, we'll close the public hearing at 6:40:29. Council, looking to your direction. Councilperson Olson.
Motion to approve the, hold on, got me at a...
I know, I lost the number, too.
1301-003. Yep.
Thank you.
That one.
Very
that
good. One. We were right with you. Councilperson Mutchler, you were second up. So you
I second it.
Okay. Further discussion? All in favor, single... Oh, further discussion.
That's okay. Well, this will be real quick. I was a citizen, pastor, not even as a pastor, just a citizen, involved with this controversy, and that was in early 2005. I had objected to the church's desiring to put a steeple up. It just happened to block my view, and I resisted it and fought it with other neighbors in the area because of the city code. It was very clear at 35 feet. I think the church was correct in coming back at us with the First Amendment issues that they did, and I. Obviously, I've changed my position on that over that last 8 years, so I'm voting in favor of this change. It is basically a code scrub and the right thing to do here.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up, apparently we have some interest on this one, so now it's going to get fun. Downtown parking, Mr. Director.
All right. Well, this is probably the simplest of all of them because, as you can see over on the whiteboard, we've already had a number of different parking ratios in downtown for multifamily development, and more than likely we've already at one time had what we're eventually going to end up with tonight. We've gone from 1.5 parking spaces per unit to 2 to 2.25, and we're proposing moving it back down for a net effect of 1.5 today. Why does this come up? As part of our code scrub and as part of our efforts to encourage development, especially in the near-term residential development downtown, we've looked at what code sections we have that are working, which ones might be obstacles, and what the rationale is behind our different codes. Over the last year or two, we've made about 5 or 6 changes to downtown with the desire to help downtown development. This in response to the commonly held belief that there hasn't been a lot of development that's gone on downtown and that downtown's continued to kind of slide since even before Bellis Fair was put in 1989. One of the things that we've heard that really gets down to the actual real cost of development for multifamily, and again, we're talking about multifamily development in the city center and the urban residential zones, not elsewhere in the city, just in the downtown core. But what we've heard is that the city is, on the one hand, wanting to encourage density, encourage tall buildings, and so on and so forth, but on the other hand, requiring off-street parking, parking on your lot, that has a significant cost by itself. What we've heard some developers say is that the land space for parking will almost certainly take up more area than the building footprint will, and that in some cases the land space for parking will actually prevent them from putting another unit or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 units on that property, thereby preventing them from moving ahead with their project just because it doesn't pencil with so few units and so much parking. So that's what we've heard. What we've done, we've listened to that, and then we've looked and seen, well, does that make sense from a land use perspective? up until 1995, parking downtown was exactly the same as parking outside of downtown. They were all at 1.5 spaces per unit. Then in 1995, we split them off, where suddenly parking downtown required more parking than parking outside of downtown. And we've continued that separation. It's interesting and ironic that we do have that separation because it's a downtown core where it could be argued you do have more opportunities for walking or more opportunities for maybe less parking. So it could be argued that in downtown you should actually require less off-street parking instead of more. We've also looked at a number of other jurisdictions and seen, okay, what are the high and low limits? You know, is there a scientific, all multifamily development requires this many but not that many? And there's not. Jurisdictions are all across the board on it. There's no sort of scientific method like we have with a restaurant that generates X number of traffic because the individuals that live in a multifamily development really vary, and they vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Is it college students? Is it retirees? Are they wealthy? Are they poor? Do they have kids? Do they not? Do the kids drive? There's a whole bunch of different factors that play in that change the consideration from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So that wasn't helpful. We also looked to see, okay, is there an equation that we could put in? Because there are so many different factors, as we took it through Planning Commission, it became apparent that we'd spend more time trying to come to a precise number than we would necessarily just picking a number out of thin air. And that precise number might not be the accurate number because the next thing you know, you might have an influx of retirees that don't use many cars or an influx of large families that use many cars. So we abandoned the idea of going for precision and we went for accuracy, where we said we're looking at the minimum number of spaces that the city will require. No, not the maximum, but the minimum that someone can develop. And we ended up with 1.5 spaces per unit. It's less than what we have right now because if, in fact, parking costs are a factor, we have not had multifamily development downtown really within the last decade. So if that was the factor, it certainly hasn't helped development. Wanted to identify something that could, again, get that ball rolling. We feel that 1.5 spaces per unit would do that. It might not be ideal for some. It might be too high for some. It might be too low for others. But we feel that it's a compromise that could work. I'm going to let the folks behind me talk a little bit more about whether they like it or not, but I will leave you with one last thing. We feel that it is not appropriate for city staff to come up with again, the precise numbers for the individual developments, since the different mix of developments, two-bedroom, three-bedroom, studio, we're not going to know precisely what they are. It's probably the folks behind me that are going to know from their experience or from other people's experience because they talk. They probably talk to each other more than we'd like them to talk to each other. They come up with, you know, what works and what doesn't, and then they model that, and then they repeat it. We feel it's more appropriate for them to come to us and say, I want to build the same development that I used in this other jurisdiction, and that other development is able to get by with X number of spaces. That might be less. This gives them the ability to document to us that they're different. It doesn't put the city in a position of dictating precision. And I think that, in addition to the 1.5 spaces per unit, would be a valuable way that the city can work with applicants. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, Council, now remember, public hearing, so technical questions of staff, not opinions, your opinions at this time. Your opinions would come later after the public hearing. Councilperson Watson, and then Councilperson Metzler.
Just a question over something we discussed in committee. The 1.5, you're talking about how they can get credit for street parking, they wouldn't necessarily have to build 1.5 for every, like, 40 units or whatever. And also how you can share the street parking? Because I was confused by if you had a developer on each corner, they'd still be getting credit for the same street parking?
I don't know precisely when in this 40-year period it was created, but the city has long had an automatic credit for downtown, where it assumes that the available parking spaces downtown are for everybody, and that even though two different developments might be giving credit for the same parking space, that is okay because, at least to this point, there has not been dramatic and pervasive overlap. Now, and I say that in the urban residential zone, which is on either side of Main Street. Yes, it's not this core area that we're in right now. The core area, the city center zone, is a little bit different because it requires mixed-use development. The urban residential zone, you can build a multifamily, and that's all you're doing is multifamily. Mm-hmm. But in this Main Street area, you have to have a commercial use as well, and that commercial use has to create its own parking. So the concept there is that they create their minimum parking, the residential has their minimum parking, and they get credit for the on-street parking, and that the hours, the peak hours, aren't necessarily going to overlap, where the on-street parking that's currently available on Main Street that's used for businesses from 9 to 5 will typically go away, and the restaurant traffic will come in, so will the residential traffic as well, but that it will work together and thrive.
When you talk about on-street parking, because there's parking at where the library is now, the temporary location, mm-hmm. does that count as parking? If someone was developed in that general area, would they be able to count that parking that's in there? Or was it really just literally right here on the street?
It would literally be on the street. I believe it's for 300 feet around it. I know that City of Bellingham, I think, says that they count it for 500 feet. We count it for 300 feet.
Okay. And you can't take advantage of other people's parking. You can't say, well, Walgreens has 50 spaces and they're only a... Okay.
No, that's private.
Okay.
And you know, giving a little, you know, suggestion to folks behind me, that was something that we heard from property owners or land use developers saying, I don't want to create too little parking because, or that the city to allow, have no parking standards because... while I will always create as much as I need, the next guy might see that I have as much, if not more, than I need, and will take advantage of that. So mm-hmm. I want the city to have a minimum.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Councilperson Mutchler, Olson, and then Goodrich.
Yeah. Your, I have two questions. You used a sentence in the same sentence. You said we're not going to be able to get precision, but we're going to get accuracy. And I didn't quite catch the nuance of that. If you could bring that back. And then the other one was, I'm just, because 1995, I don't think even Mal was here in 95. What was pushing those? Yeah.
He was on
well,
the earth.
I was here too, sure. But not here in the, on the at the table. So what was pushing those numbers up?
Okay. The first question first. I guess we coined the term precise but not accurate as we were going through the urban growth area modeling, where out of 3,000 acres that we were looking at, we came down 3,000 acres in 20 plus years, we came down to a tenth of an acre, 4,000 square feet as far as land use needs. We were very precise, but we were totally inaccurate. We had folks had no idea about what they might have been talking about, and they could have been far off by an order of magnitude. But so they were able to substitute the precision and suggest that because I'm so precise, I must be correct, where you could be totally wrong. I could ask you what the 50th state was, and you could say it's New Hampshire. You're very precise, but you're absolutely wrong. You're not accurate. So that's what we're talking about. We don't want necessarily to say it's going to be 1.47 spaces per unit, which is very precise, when in fact it might be closer to around 3 acres or 3 units per 3 spaces per unit, which might be more accurate. Your second question, 1995, whereas the present city regulations specify that a second-story dwelling is permitted use in the central business zoning, but do not address multiple second-story dwellings or third-story dwellings, we expand it from 1.5 spaces per unit to 2 spaces per unit. So basically there was a zoning change back in 1995 that acknowledged that, gosh, you might have more than just one unit on top of your commercial business. You might have more than that. Thus, the council at that time felt that there should be more spaces per unit.
I wish I could ask the council back now, why does it matter if the units go up, they go sideways? Anyway, that's very peculiar argument.
Well, if you think back on, no, I mean, we've had some discussion when we did the downtown, the first downtown look phase. There were some older business owners that were convinced that we had a parking problem. And then we did, you know, on this council, allocated time to have a parking study that showed we didn't have it. But you would still get some older businesses that say downtown still has a parking problem. When the studies show that's not true, but that, you know, the Ferndale's not uncommon. A lot of places where if you don't get to park right by the front door, then there's a parking problem.
Thank you. So how did then? Because that is pretty recent. 2009 was right before I came on. We bumped it up. What was the argument there?
It was a continuation of that. I don't think that the parking study had really seeped into people's thoughts, and so the concern was that we just created the city center and urban residential zones, and clearly there was going to be a ton of new multifamily development coming in, and that they were all going to have visitors along with them. So it was bumped up to 2.25 parking spaces per unit. I helped to write it, and I was wrong, and you know, I don't know whether council believes that council was wrong in adopting it. I believe that it was too many parking spaces for downtown, at least to encourage development incrementally within the next 3 to 5 years. 20 years from now, maybe that's right. 20 years from now, maybe one space per unit is right. I think that right now, 1.5 spaces per unit is right.
Councilperson Olson is next.
I was just amazed that Yuri could explain 1995. He was only like 10.
That's not true. He didn't
No, it's perfectly
that.
True. It's
he
completely
was a
true.
Very intelligent 10, though.
It was completely true.
It was class.
If we kind of touched on this in committee, I still don't like the part about everybody can get multiple credit. In theory, if we had 50 parking spaces and 4 different projects going, they're getting credit for 200 parking spaces we don't have. Just we only have 50.
So be careful on your response, because that's kind of an opinion question. And that would be...
It's mathematics.
Or you could hold that question until after the public hearing. That's in a little bit of gray.
Well, and I think that my response to that would be, yes, your math is correct, and I would leave it to council to decide whether that's a policy they want to continue with.
Oh, very good.
Very
answer.
Nice.
Good job.
Very.
He's Don't even brilliant at 10, and he's brilliant.
I'll even accept that.
Well, then you can bring it up later.
Don't forget, he was my student.
it was Councilmember Hansen. If I'm good, then it's because of him.
So, you know, again, for the students in the audience, he is a Ferndale graduate, so it shows where you can go. Councilperson Goodman.
Right down the street.
My comment is almost a border comment question, and I think it needs to be more if we have some of the public comment, people can address it. Visitor parking versus street parking.
So let's hold
that. I just want to see how that fits into the 1.5 units per thing.
The chair will hold that question till it's not appropriate this time. Councilperson Watson,
Technical question. The table on page 70. I'll give you a second to be fair.
Yes.
Where it says read the red line. It says two spaces per unit, and you took out the plus one guest, and then no maximum. Am I reading that correctly? So I was wondering where the 1.5 was going to come in.
That's with the credit that Council Member Olson is talking about. The 25% credit, 25% of 2 is 4, or 0.5, I'm sorry, which then gets you 1.5.
Okay, so it's 1.5 plus the credit, so they get 2?
It's 2 minus the credit, which gets you 1.5.
Okay. But the table's going to stay at 2.
The table would okay. stay.
Okay, Council, any more technical questions? Okay, we'll open up the public hearing period. For the high school students, the reason why you saw me do that is now we want to hear from the public. The Council should not make their opinion. They should not have an opinion until they hear from the public. The public has a chance to speak their mind, and then they'll make their opinion. So they had a chance to have technical questions, but they were not allowed to say, I like this or don't like this, because we haven't heard. Now the public process moves forward.
Now they can tell us what we think.
That's right. Now very good. Now they can tell you what they would like you to think.
Like.
Okay, the first one up is Mr. Ron York.
I'll defer to Scott Hilliard if I can. That's all right.
No, we don't allow that. Why don't you sign up? We have rules here. Oh, you'd like to trade?
Now
we're trading positions. Okay, we're going to allow it.
First pick in the draft.
Yeah, the first pick in the draft, Mr. Hilliard. Oh, Mr. excuse me, 701-20, we're opening the public hearing. Thank you, Sam.
Scott Hillius, 5290 Graveline Road, Bellingham, Washington. I came tonight prepared to speak on the parking. However, there's been a few changes now that I see this, the ratio here, which is, thank you, Yori, if you wrote that all up in there, because my first question or thing we'd like to consider is what is the Council's goal for downtown? Is it density? Because if it is density, parking is everything. It has you can let me refer. 8 units have been built in the last 18 years since the parking change has gone from 1.5. And accuracy, as Yori says, is the goal to this new ordinance. What I've done is I've printed out, I don't know if I have enough for everyone, but this is Bellingham's residential and multifamily parking requirements. It's been very successful in Bellingham. And I also see that Councilman Mutzler has put a submission for record, which is almost identical to what I had, but this had the anyway, I'm going to hand it out anyway. For that consideration, if you notice that the city of Bellingham has, for accuracy, has a unit number for whether it be a studio, one bedroom, two bedroom, and so on. My development is down on Cherry Street, is definitely generated for density in the core, and I have what is proposed anyway right now through my development is I have almost 30% studios, which are going to have in the city of Bellingham have one parking. Parking space requirement, and the 1.5 is going to I completely lost my thought of where I was going with that. Anyway, I endorse the I think that the council should take in consideration Bellingham's for accuracy and density to take into consideration what they've done there and consider what I've handed you here and. Councilman Mutzer's submission for record and what they've done there. I think that is, that's what I had. That's my part of it. Thank you.
Not bad. Well, 20 seconds remaining. So questions of this person and councilperson Goodrich?
This goes to my earlier thing that I was delayed. How do you deal with visitors parking in your is that included in your 1.5, or, you know, if we went this where you have 30 studio apartments, you know, one spot per apartment, where are the visitors going to park?
Well, if you look at the submission for record from Councilman Musler and his and what he has observed, this at 51 units, and granted, my development isn't all studios, so I'm going to have, you know, I'm going to fall under the ordinance for all of that. You look at what he has observed here with, you know, 74 off-street, but they have 21, 19, 26, 38 empty stalls. They have quite a bit of empty stalls. Now, no one's going to build in the core. Well, I can't say no one, but no one's going to build just all studio apartments. There's going to be a mix to be considered. So if you built a building for whatever reason, I don't understand that development theory, but if they built a building that was completely studios, then maybe they'd be reconsidered with the, you know, having a requirement of one. But and then you'd have to use your on-street credit for visitors.
Mr. Goodrich, a response or?
I just could see it though, if, you know, if you're doing an assigned parking spots, you know, saying, well, gee, you know, I came home and there's somebody parked in my parking spot. And we were having a talk earlier today about that, you know.
Somebody's not a resident?
You have your number of spots based off of this, whether it's one, one and a half, or whatever, but they're going to would be assigned to a unit, or would not all of them be assigned, and therefore there are some open visitor ones. I'm just concerned that we end up with a whole bunch of people parking on the street, and then, you know, going into what, you know, Councilmember Olson even said, you know, and an issue with that by lowering this number down, not providing enough off-street parking for people above and beyond.
Okay, so I'm sure that, I mean, that's going to be a subject that's an important part of the discussion, so I think we'll probably have that in one of our other subjects. Any more questions for Mr. Hillius, Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, thank you for coming. Again, I wasn't aware of your proposal until this evening. My question is, would you, staff and the Planning Commission are recommending a one-size-fits-all, whether it's a studio or a four-bedroom, and I didn't know that we had four-bedroom apartments until I knocked on the door of the manager at the particular four-bedroom. Like, it's a big place. So staff is recommending, and the Planning Commission is, that we'll just have 2 or 1.5, regardless if it's a studio or four-bedroom.
The offset, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
The offset on that?
No, I'm not about the offset. I'm just talking about, should it be different? Should there be different numbers for a studio or a four-bedroom?
The city of Bellingham seems to think so. The city of Bellingham has a successful. Should it matter to me? Oh, yeah. For accuracy, the four-bedroom, I don't have a copy of my, I handed out all my Bellingham regs. But the city of Bellingham has, they go up to, is it 1.5? Yeah, 1.5 per two-bedroom, and then three-bedroom goes to 2, and four-bedroom goes to 3. So does it matter? Yeah, I think it would. Four-bedroom apartment, that wouldn't be something I would, that would be in my agenda. I've never considered that. That's a large, might as well build a house.
I didn't know either, but we have
it. You have them.
And they're full.
Good to know. Good to know. There's a market. So I think.
Okay. Did I have any more questions for Mr. Hillius? No. Seeing none.
Okay.
But once again, Councilman Goodrich, non-resident parking is going to be an issue wherever. You know, people who don't live there wanting to, you know, or squatters or whatever you want to call them, or they're always going to try and, you know, that's why there's parking wars. It's just, they're always going to be trying to do something, you know. And it is the owner's responsibility to put in, you know, these are however many. And assigned parking, though, that's problematic to a development as well, as you put someone's number on their spot and people can be able to pin where their car is, you know, if they have a riff or something. So assigned parking is a problematic thing to a developer, too. Yes?
I just had a thought after Council Member Goodrich's concern, a legitimate concern about visitors. And he's concerned about visitors parking kind of filling up the street. But we're also saying that we want people to fill up the street because we're going to give them credit for the street. So do we care whether they're visitors or not visitors? Because we're actually saying visitors are going to park in the street anyway, aren't we?
They park in the street when they visit a restaurant downtown?
Seem to be saying we're okay with that.
Okay.
Councilperson Hansen?
Do you know whether Bellingham gives credit for on-street parking in the parking regulation?
I do not know that. I do not come prepared to answer that question. Maybe one of my people behind me do.
Does Jory know?
Our director says he's not sure. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. York, would you like to come forward, or you just want to do a ditto? He has an original thought. Okay, welcome, sir.
Thank you. Ron York, 1292 West Axton Road. Where do I live? In Ferndale. I wouldn't characterize myself as an opponent or a proponent, but I would like to share some information from my perspective, working in the industry for probably about 30 years or so. I think what you're considering tonight is going to be good for Ferndale generally. The current ratio at 2.25 per unit, I think, speaks for itself. We haven't had the development in downtown core. Probably that would be a lot of. I would never consider a 2.25 parking ratio. And I'm a builder that tends to overbuild a little bit in terms of parking. One of the things that I really try to be careful of in my developments is to make sure that I have adequate parking. So I don't, even if the parking ratio would allow me to build at 1.5, there are some builders out there that may choose to amp it up a little bit. One of the biggest problems that I've found in my developments over the years is that the things that create disharmony in your project is sometimes the noisy neighbor, and one of them is, you've got my parking spot. And we solved that with management. In fact, we actually can fine our tenants $50 for parking in the wrong spot. So I guess if I'd say that if I was a city councilman, I might tend to relax on that just a little bit, knowing that not just the bad thing's going to happen. There are bad actors out there, and we appreciate the protection that an ordinance provides us. But not everyone is going to go to that level. I would like to address, if it's appropriate now, you asked about visitor parking. A couple of things on that. Visitor parking is visitor parking. It isn't long-term. It's the birthday party. Grandma and grandpa come over, aunt and uncle come over, they throw the birthday party, and they're gone. It's not a problem that we have to live with forever. And on the average, it's really a short term. You also have a certain vacancy rate in all apartment buildings. And when a unit's vacant, and that happens, you have parking spots that are freed up. So I would suggest that that's why when you drive around, and if you do what Councilman Mutchler did, is to do your own personal study on that and say, how full are these when we require? The buildings that I've been building on Siddle Street are not nearly full in terms of parking. We have many, many of the people that we provide two parking stalls for that just only have one car. So it's a good scenario that way. Sorry?
Sorry.
I'm out of time?
No, that's great.
Okay.
Now you're open for questions.
Okay.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Do you have an opinion on the credit principle that It says 2.25, but I think we've always been able to get down to, well, I guess, 1.75. So there's always been that half. How do developers look upon that process and appealing that? And then secondly, like I asked Scott, do you have an opinion about whether it should change, whether it's a studio or a four-bedroom, or should you just one straight across?
Yeah, I think I have a strong opinion, and thank you for asking. The only thing that I don't like about having a parking credit is that I, as a developer or a builder or a property owner, I really don't know without expending a lot of money. Because the first thing that Yori's going to ask if I'm going for my parking credit is he wants to know about my project. I'm going to have someone design the buildings, and they've got to put the parking in there, and then we've got to do a unit mix. So all of that stuff has to happen, and we might even get to a point where we have to order a traffic study. And so all of these things add uncertainty and expense to the project. The other thing I'm not sure is a real good idea with that scenario, and I'm not saying I'm opposed to it, but it creates a big job for city staff to debate that whole thing out and argue it out with the developer who's really, really wants to just get his parking down to the bare bones minimum. So that's going to cost something to the city, and it's going to cost something to the developer. I like the idea of adopting for the downtown core only, adopting something along the line on the ratio that Bellingham has. I think it's proven, it works, it's not a disaster. You wouldn't go wrong there at all. And then add to that, as an incentive for downtown, some consideration for reduced parking from there. I think it makes sense.
Okay. Further questions, Councilperson Ingram, Goodrich, and then over to Watson.
Well, I find it interesting that we have such a concern with visitor parking. Nobody's concerned with visitor parking where I live. And Sunday was a game day, and I enjoyed the game. My neighbor must have really enjoyed the game, because at one time I counted 14 cars in the street. So visitor parking is visitor parking. They're going to find a spot to park. If they have to walk a half a block, so be it. But I don't know why we're so concerned with visitor parking and multifamily type construction when we're not concerned with it in single family where I live. I mean, we have cars all over that neighborhood, and that my neighbor wasn't the only party in the neighborhood that last Sunday. There are times when, as my fellow council member over here on the end can attest to, it's difficult to get through the streets on certain weekends. So it's visitor parking is visitor parking, and I don't see why we should be as a city so concerned with it in one scenario when we're obviously not concerned with it in the other.
Councilperson Goodrich and then Watson.
My question is in regards to the spaces. We are talking about normal car size spaces, not what Bellingham has done, because there's reference to Bellingham where they've shrunk their spaces down and even smaller when they put the word compact in there, to where if you have any vehicle of any size, you can't even park unless you take one and a half spaces.
Full staff, but before that, is your question for Mr. York, or can he sit down?
Mr. York?
Is your question for Mr.
Mm-hmm.
York?
Yes.
Okay. York, you want to just sneak in beside and answer for the record? Sorry, Mr. York. We'll push you aside for a second.
The size of the parking spaces are Ferndale parking spaces, not any other jurisdiction.
So we're not letting the builders have the option of doing compact type stuff?
They would be able to, if they had a multifamily development, they can do 25% compact spaces. I think our compact space is a little bit larger than Bellingham's.
Okay, Councilperson Watson.
Just a question. Here in Ferndale, I don't see much. Lived a lot of different places, but parking in the basement, I know not literally digging a basement, but the first floor being parking and then going up, you don't see that much around here. Is that an earthquake issue or some other issue that you seem to make parking all around the building and then build up?
We do in the townhomes that we build, in the sense that we tuck our parking in underneath the buildings and put garage doors in front of them.
Okay.
So we do that.
And you get credit for that?
Well, I'm building, it's really not. In fact, really, there's nothing that I'm going to gain out of the this parking ordinance for downtown, because I don't build downtown.
Okay.
I don't have any plans to. But it does save space, and people do have to look at that as a as an option, because you know you're buying your land by the square foot,
mm-hmm.
not by the acre anymore.
Okay.
And then, do you want to do a technical reason of why you don't see too many people dig down in this area to put a garage under or two?
Other than that water thing.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, we have we're wet in the Northwest. Water problems are difficult to deal with. We did that on a commercial building, the Summit View professional building on near Church and Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any water issues there, but we spent a lot of money making sure that we wouldn't.
Okay.
So a lot of the choices we make as builders come down to, is it feasible? Does it work dollar and cents wise?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good. Very good. Thank you. Councilor Zimmerman.
Mr. York, yes. With your experience in Bellingham, does Bellingham, they have parking meters. Do they have any parking meters outside these multiple projects? I mean, I can see where, hey, use the street all you want, because cha-ching, 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 if you don't pay, cha-ching.
Yeah.
Not that we'd ever do that.
You want parking meters?
Never. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a real good idea.
It doesn't happen in Bellingham, but I'm saying around your projects.
Yeah, we don't have any around ours, no. And in fact, I think what would happen is if you did that, it would have to be staged, and as soon as you stage it in one area, then you've got a handicap. You're at a disadvantage in the rental market. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Mr. Hillius, you wanted to enter into that fray? You got to come to the microphone then.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Councilman Watson, my project is in the floodplain. So we will be elevating that first floor and utilizing all that square footage for parking. That's by design.
Okay.
I have to. Not digging down, but you'll still be.
Right.
You'll still have.
Well, there'll be some foundation work and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, I will be. There'll be elevated under garage parking for every one of the buildings.
Okay. And then so your building will come out. You'll use all the rest of the space for building and then just have parking underneath.
It'll be going up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next up, Mr. Bob Bell.
Can you refer to the next person?
Well, we're big on this tonight.
You guys need to meet beforehand and take straws.
The
third
pick.
The speaker is Sir
Tim. Well,
Spellman.
He gets two picks next year.
Yeah.
Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you. Tim Cornwell, 2930 Leeward Way, Bellingham, Washington. And thank you for allowing me to be here tonight. Several points to talk through. How much time do we get?
Three
minutes. Okay.
But if you really,
I might get cut off
after that, or I decide I like it.
So in the downtown core, there is a finite available amount of land available to develop in the first place, and so the council has to determine what kind of development do you want to encourage down there. And so if you do the higher density requirement that you're asking a developer to fall under is going to shape or eliminate or attract what kind of development occurs. And if you do a 2.25 parking space per door of that building, you're going to encourage larger units. A developer's not going to want to build a studio or a one-bedroom house in an area that's going to require parking of that magnitude. It pencils in terms of how much you can get for rent from a studio or a one-bedroom as opposed to a 3 or 4-bedroom, it pencils out better to build a bigger unit if you're going to be required that kind of space. And then also the square footage taken up by that much parking and how much available space you have in your building. So assuming that's true, I wanted to speak a little bit about the value of studio and one-bedroom units. Because if you're in the downtown core, the population that needs that kind of housing, that's affordable housing, that's close to town, and available public transportation, walking distance to shopping, and those kind of things. And so if you don't create an environment where a developer will build that kind of unit, you're eliminating housing for those kind of people that need housing in a core area. So that's just one thing to consider. The other thing is there's a negative impact on the environment. The more parking you're requiring, the greater impervious surface you're also creating. And when you create impervious surface, you're creating more stormwater runoff into our stormwater system that the city has to treat. You're also, if there's a requirement for detention then, because you're requiring so much impervious surface, then there's detention or retention of that stormwater to be treated before it's released into the creek. And that is more land that's used up on an available finite piece of ground that can't be used for constructing a building. So that's a negative I see in requiring more parking. I did an informal case study, not as involved as Mr. Mutchler's was, but I just drove around one night after being on the Planning Commission going, well, what's really going on out there? So I just drove around, well, you know, all through town, all the multifamily units that I could find. And it was around 8 o'clock at night, and I was surprised that most of them were 50 to 75% full, just an estimate of what I could see. There was none of them that were packed. Wow, this thing's packed to the gills. There isn't any available parking. Now, when those buildings were built, I don't know what the ratios were at that point in time, but my observation was...
2 more minutes.
Okay, thank you. These were not full. The other thing I noted was street parking. There was plentiful, except near eating establishments or drinking establishments. Outside of that, the streets were just vacant, just ghost towns. So just something that I noticed. Some projects won't get built if you require so much parking. Case in point is one I'm doing right now in Bellingham. I'm building duplexes. There's 3-bedroom units. And on a 3-bedroom duplex, City of Bellingham requires 2 parking spaces per unit. And my lots are tiny. I mean, I'm just going to be able to fit this thing in there. So you start taking a look at setbacks and wetlands, and then if you have to treat water, those kind of things, you hurt feasibility, again, the more parking you're requiring. And fortunately, I'm able to do my project with these 2 parking spaces, and they are 9x18 units. I think that compact is only available for commercial, is my understanding. But they're 9x18 parking spaces in Bellingham. If I tried to build that here on that same size lot, couldn't do it at 2.25. So I wouldn't be able to do my project here. And I want to do projects here. I want to do some development in Ferndale. And so I hope you guys will consider, and even I would love to see on studios and 1-bedrooms, just 1 space per unit. When you take into account something Ron mentioned was vacancy, there's always a certain amount of vacancy in any unit. The other thing is shift work. In our town, there's a lot of shift workers. And so that means that there are people there during the daytime sleeping. So because of our community between shift work, students, people away on vacation, vacancy, you're never going to have a full parking lot anyway. Even if it was 100% full and everybody had a car, it's still not going to happen, in my belief. That's my opinion. And I think you're safe in just doing 1 parking space for a studio, 1 parking space for 1-bedroom, and then go up from there. Thank you.
Okay, questions for former Planning Commissioner Cornwell?
No, I think they're great. I think that's a great observation about the studio and the 1-bedroom.
Councilperson Mutchler?
First, thank you for serving on the Planning Commission last year. I appreciate that. So there is a relationship, a parking policy as to whether a developer is going to build those singles and those studios. And it sounds like you think there is a market for singles and studios, but we're not allowing it because the parking is making those not feasible.
I just think it creates a barrier. It doesn't encourage that kind of development. And it's silly. It's creating impervious surface. I'm going to have a 1-bedroom apartment building, and I have to put 2.25 stalls, parking stalls? That doesn't make sense to me.
So are you also recommending the Bellingham standard?
I think the Bellingham standard would be a good one to take a look at and consider. I think the 1.5 is still too much to do across the board. I think that you guys can debate this and come up with a good outcome, but that's just my opinion is. On the studio and 1-bedrooms, especially in the downtown core. Now, if we were up, you know, a mile out of town up on the hill or something like that, it might be different because that's more of a commuter type of tenant. But when you're in the downtown core, there's a better chance they're going to be riding the bus or they're going to be walking to work or find some, or, you know, riding a bike. They're closer to where all the action is, right? So it's not as necessary.
Can I just get a clarification from Mr. Burnett? You and the Planning Commission did talk about this, right? You didn't necessarily want to break it down between studios, one bedroom, two, three, four, and then that sort of thing, trying to figure out how many parking spaces each development needed. I think there was a reason. Was it staff time, or was it just, what was that breakdown?
It was back to the precision, but not necessarily accurate. Commissioner Cornwell was on the Planning Commission at that time as well. I think that there was the concern that what happens, what works in Bellingham, while they might be close to us, the opportunities for pedestrian travel, biking, busing, we have a bus once an hour, they have a bus once every 8 minutes, are so dramatically different that it's apples and oranges. I don't know if that was necessarily the Planning Commission's perspective on that, but that was another thing that was discussed.
So you're comfortable with just the 1.5 for everything. That's still staff's recommendation, 1.5 for whether it's a studio or a four-bedroom, 1.5.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, I think you already kind of stole my thunder a little because that's exactly what I was going to say. Some of these things work in cities where they've got public transportation. Problem with Ferndale is our pathetic version of public transportation is non-existent to horrific. It's so bad that I would tell people that come here to visit, we don't have any public transportation in the city of Ferndale. It is absolutely ridiculous. So if I was going to be selling my home and moving into downtown core so I could walk to the store as I get a little older, and there's a possibility that someday I may want to do that, I'm sure as heck not going to count on public transportation. I'm going to have to get my little walker out and just, you know, creep on down the street until I get to Higgins, because I'm not going to stand out in this kind of weather for unknown amount of time waiting for the one bus an hour that happens to trip by the bus stop.
And now our WTA representative.
And now our WTA representative will rebut that.
Well, you think? Councilperson Hansen.
The WTA, which is one of the top transportation outfits in the country, bases its routing and the number of routes on the number of passengers. I'd love to see Ferndale have a circulator route every 15 minutes, but it doesn't pencil out at one or two passengers per bus. So don't call the system pathetic, please, just because we have people that choose not to ride the bus.
So it is a giant circle. I talked about this earlier. We are probably years away from building a clientele that wants to have public transportation, but that's the old chicken the egg. Mr. Bell has heard me talk about this so many times, he's sick of me making the statement. I mean, you know, zero development in the last few years means zero development. Zero is still zero, and so there's nobody there to fill the buses because it's zero. So, Councilperson Mutzler.
Buses aren't the topic tonight, but I will say that I have three kids that have attended Whatcom that took the bus and saved their dad probably hundreds of dollars a month in having to provide vehicles and gas and those things. So for one family, it's working, so I appreciate WTA.
Okay, we have another person on a public hearing that you want to defer to somebody else, or do you want to take your time? Okay, good.
Come on up.
He's stepping forward.
There's nowhere to hide.
Welcome, Mr. Bell.
Thank you. Council, Mr. Mayor, Bob Bell. I have business in town as well as a number of pieces of property. I want to kind of talk about that, the bus thing. It was kind of a hot button. But we will need bus service if we had housing downtown. In other words, I think it is a matter of people. And I think the whole issue that I've certainly been involved in the last many years is that we need more development downtown. And I think if you get more development downtown, you will have the need for bus service, and you'll get the 15, you know, bus service every 15 minutes. I'd like to address a little bit the 1.5 versus going to the type of thing that Bellingham is doing. And I think that you're always best served if you let the market decide what needs to be built. And by putting 1.5, obviously you're going to discourage the one bedroom in the studios, and you're going to discourage those and encourage the larger units. And I think there's a real need for the smaller units because there's a cost factor there. And also, of course, amount of space you're taking. So I think that having it follow more in line with what Bellingham's doing, I think would be better served as far as let the market decide, you know, what the community needs. Because I think right now there is a need. In fact, I heard a number earlier tonight about there's a need for studio and one bedrooms. There's actually a shortage of them. And what we're doing, if we go to just the straight 1.5, is we're discouraging them.
Point of clarification, and you probably can't answer this, but I think you probably have a pretty good idea. Do we have, a shortage, a need, do we have any studios or one bedrooms downtown? Are any of the, I guess the upstairs across the street is there, I think they're one.
Does Corral have any? Is the Corral small enough?
No, I'm talking about downtown core.
Oh, they actually down all the way downtown.
I don't think there's any studios that I know. I think that, you're absolutely correct. I think the only one bedrooms are, above the Cedars.
Down by the Pinehurst Square.
Maybe across the street here.
Right, but you're talking onesie-twosie. You're not talking any considerable amount. And I think that cost of housing is an issue. Of all the discussions we've had, one of the things that doesn't come up a lot is anytime you have adding more things for a developer to do, you're adding cost to the cost of the development. Therefore, you're adding cost to the rent or the purchase of that particular project.
So just for my curiosity, maybe, Tim, you can answer that, is because I know in Bellingham, there's a market for studios, and for certain people, that studio is a good market. What's the value? What's the difference in a studio in terms of rental with a one bedroom?
Yeah, a studio or a one bedroom, as opposed to a three bedroom.
Well, no,
in terms of rental
income, we have a couple one bedrooms, but we obviously have a market. So, to a high school student that may be looking for a place to stay, a two bedroom. Splitting up that rent as opposed to a one-bedroom or even a studio, which is what probably comes up.
All right. Okay, for college housing?
Yeah.
Right now, the rule of thumb we use is $450 a bedroom. That's what students pay for a house. So if they rent a, whether it's a four-bedroom house or a one-bedroom house, it's $450 per bedroom.
Okay.
That helps. That's how we look at student housing.
The studio
would be
less.
Same as a one-bedroom, probably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, good. Thank you. All right. Sorry, Bob.
No, that's okay. I think that's all I had to say. I wanted to defer because I think there are some people that are actively doing developments on a regular basis. I'm not. So I think their knowledge about what happens out there in the real world and the need for...
Well, and you actually have turned my thought process a little bit, is I know that across the street and above the Cedars is 100% rented, and he says he has a waiting list. So the market for a one-bedroom... If it's completely maxed out at this time, that's a good thing, 100%.
Right.
That shows you the market maybe has some room.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Councilperson Watson and then Councilperson Hanson.
Not the speaker for Mr. Burnett.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
I'm trying to understand how this would work from a staff viewpoint if we actually did start to pick and choose based on units. If we did the Bellingham here where it was one parking for each studio unit, one and a half for each one or two bedroom. Mr. York mentioned that, in order to have these discussions with you, he might need to come with plans. So would they need to come with their actual blueprint showing you how many spaces and how many units and square footage and determine what's really... what if it's a 1,500-square-foot studio? I'm trying to think of how staff would do that.
My sense of where Mr. York was talking about having to come to us was more having to do with the credit. Are there enough spaces within 300 feet of my residence? And I think that that's a valid point, and it's something that Mr. Hillius has talked about as well, is applicants need to have some consistent expectations from the get-go so they don't need to invest in, architectural plans and so on and so forth. While staff recommends the 1.5 spaces per unit, I think that it would be reasonable to amend our proposal to eliminate that parking credit, which is kind of nebulous and we've always provided, and to simply say 1.5 spaces per unit for residential development. I think the staff would be comfortable with that. That would provide some consistency.
Of any size from studio to four bedroom, basically the, 1.5.
Exactly. As far as the breakdown per unit, staff was never opposed to a breakdown, but because we have such a small sample size, as we've talked about, we don't know what the needs are in Ferndale. And we don't feel that Bellingham is a good model. We don't have three universities. We don't have a downtown development district that supplies parking in theory, and again, we don't have the bus service. We're not saying that Bellingham's model is wrong. We're just saying that the chicken and the egg again. Without an accurate understanding of how many spaces are necessary in our downtown right now and for the next 5 years, we don't know what the right numbers are. We don't know what the accuracy is going to be. And we don't want to be so liberal in our regulations as to say that anything's allowed, because then it could have more of an impact on the city. Whether or not this would change that bottom number, 1.5 spaces per unit, staff's recommendation would be to wait to see whether or not it works. If it doesn't work, we were here 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, it didn't work. Maybe we could pull the trigger a little bit faster if it doesn't. I don't know. I haven't necessarily heard whether or not 1.5 spaces would not work. Maybe I've heard more about what might be preferable.
Mr. Hansen? Ingram?
I was going to mention that I don't think anyone has proposed this, but if you look at what some of the larger cities are doing, some of those studios get rather small. There's some projects in Seattle where they're as small as 170 square feet. That's pretty teeny tiny. And obviously, probably not more than one person living there. That's a little bit small. When we were talking about studios, studio apartments mix very well with a public transportation system that's by your door every 15 or 20 minutes. We don't have that. It's probably not going to happen right away. And you folks are right when you're talking about if the studio apartments are built and if they are people who wish to ride the bus, the service will be there when they need it. Right now, we can't justify running buses that often or out in the neighborhoods when they're only picking up one and two passengers. If you look at the difference in the ridership in downtown Ferndale and downtown Bellingham, it's you know, they run every 15 minutes with full buses. We run every hour with buses that are one-third full. So we can't count on the bus service. Our bus service is not designed in Ferndale for the commuter type of bus service that you find in the larger cities, Bellingham included. The only other thing I'll say about the bus service, and then I'll be quiet about it, there's two types of people that ride the bus. Well, there's three types of bus service. The people that ride the bus, most of them are in fact apartment dwellers. You will find the vast majority. I have no statistical analysis to back this up, but if you look at where people are getting on the bus, they're getting on the bus in front of apartments. A lot of those folks have parked their car and have decided to ride the bus as opposed to driving the car, because they have, wherever they're going, they have parking requirements that make it difficult for them. A lot of them have a spouse who's gone to work with a car. And so you can't count out, because there is a bus service, you can't count out and say, well, we're going to have people that will not own a car. That's not the type of, we're a rural community. Almost everyone's going to have a car if they're physically able to have a car. And So I think, well, I'm just going to leave it at that. My opinion about the, what we should do is we'll come at public hearings closed.
Okay. Councilperson Ingram and then Metzler.
Well, Yuri, it's been my experience over my considerable number of years that studio apartments are usually a single individual. They're rarely a live-together couple or even an apartment share type arrangement. They're almost invariably single people. And as such, I really don't know why we couldn't make the differentiation there as to if you're renting a studio apartment, you really shouldn't need more than one parking place for that studio apartment. It's interesting because I think I mentioned it to Gary this afternoon. I was reading a news article about the automobile industry and they're in a semi-state of panic right now in many of the auto headquarters about the demographics of car buying. Most of the cars right now are being purchased by people over 40 years of age. The younger crowd doesn't buy cars. They just don't buy them. So I know my son hasn't owned a car in, I don't know how long, long time. But it's coming to that point where studios for, in Ferndale, we've got, don't forget, we've got two refineries and we've got an aluminum smelter out here. And I was amazed when talking with one of the people out at, it's Phillips 66 now. At Phillips 66, how many of their employees are transient? They don't permanently live in Whatcom County. They come here, they spend 6 months, they go back to Louisiana or someplace else and spend 6 months with a family, and then they come back here for another 6 months. They rotate. And I didn't know that. So for some of those people, I mean, a studio would make eminently good sense because they wouldn't have to spend all that money on a big house or a big one-bedroom apartment is a lot of money, is a lot of space for a single person to take care of, especially if it's a younger single person. They don't like to take care of stuff. You know, their houses start to look like Yuri's office.
I don't know. You have the ability to say all studios are one- or two-bedroom. I'm not so sure that would be
Well, I would, I guess, pose a question to council, and I know that you wanted to close the hearing. We're talking about minimums, and I think Council Member Hansen was more or less stating, or someone in front of me was more or less stating, that odds are there's going to be a vehicle attached with each unit. Maybe there's only going to be one, but if you consider that the minimum, that there's one, and if that's all we're requiring, what happens if there is a second person living there? It's not a full two. You know, the average doesn't come out to two. But if you have one additional person for every four, it comes out to 1.25 spaces. So the question would be, is one per studio apartment enough? And that's a question for you to answer. And I think that everybody has anecdotal evidence that it is enough or it's not.
So I'll let you ponder that. I want to get through the public hearing. So is there anyone from the audience that would like to come forward and speak on this issue that hasn't spoken before as we move forward in the discussion? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing at 7:48:20. Okay, Councilperson Mutchler?
I did have a question of the four gentlemen, and maybe they can just real quick. My impression is that they've all four recommended a Bellingham-like approach, and the problem is, and I spoke to the planning department in Bellingham this morning because I had the hardest time reading through municipal codes, and that was the problem with theirs. But they actually have two different categories, and I believe that you guys are referring to the citywide standard of 1.5, 2, and 3. But the city of Bellingham has a lesser requirement in the downtown area, kind of opposite of what we're doing. Oddly enough, the York neighborhood is listed, Ron. I thought that was kind of funny. York, Sunnyland, Sea Home, that'd be by the university, the letter streets. They call it the reduced parking overlay district. And all those numbers are bumped back by half in that downtownish area, which I was going to ask the director what he thought of that. They're kind of the opposite of us. They're saying they need less parking downtown than in the more outside areas of the city. Oh, I'm sorry, and I was curious which plan you guys were approaching, because there are two plans in Bellingham. You guys had thought about that or not?
You want to handle that, Scott?
Well,
come forward.
I was talking about the original, not the York neighborhood, and that condensed.
Which is a higher standard, which is a higher number of parking.
Right, right. That was in my presentation. I should have clarified that, I guess.
Ron, do you want to answer?
Thank you. I had a little bit different idea when I walked into the meeting tonight, but hearing what the proposal was, it changed my mind a little bit. And I think if we did something just a little bit better, with a very slight modification, go with the staff's recommendation with just some consideration for the studio element. And I'm not sure what that is. Maybe that's a 1 1/4 if you feel comfortable with that. It might be one, but that's not a bad way to go.
Yeah.
I think you would be well served to do that.
Yeah, you look, I mean, and Mel brought it up, is that in Seattle, that's kind of an exciting new thing. And who's to say that, I know the students are here, but, I mean, everyone has a budget. Who knows? I mean, like Bob said, we don't know if there's a market. Maybe there is a market for a $375 a month studio apartment. We won't know. Obviously people are looking at a cheaper way to live in Seattle. It's a market that's hot. Yeah, it's tiny to think about 175 square feet, but that's not my problem as a mayor. That's not your problem as a council person. That's the developer who decides. This is the market I can build to, and I hope to rent them. And that's their situation.
But and I think that's a really important component, because we're focusing on numbers. And the studio, we're focusing on numbers, and we're also talking about something that we don't yet have. And so there's some question about what that will consist of. And so that's why on page 69 at the very bottom, we are proposing a clause that says that for any use other than single-family residential development, the zoning administrator may require that the applicant provide a professional assessment of anticipated parking requirements and peak hours of operation, and may utilize such an assessment to reduce or modify parking requirements on a case-by-case basis. What that would do is, if someone came in, it's most likely not going to be just studio apartments, as we've heard. If there's a mix of studio apartments, three-bedroom, two-bedroom, whatever, an applicant can come in with their proposal and say, in this other jurisdiction, it could even be Bellingham, whatever, here are my demographics, and here's why I, as a developer, feel confident that I can have less than the minimum. It's not the city putting that forward, and that's where I'm a little bit hesitant allowing less across the board, but allowing an applicant to come in and say, I've been there, I've done that, and with this development, this could work. It's not a variance. It's something that we could be kind of led by the hand. So, again, maybe in 5 years, we can go down to that across the board one unit. I don't know if we're there yet.
I have Councilperson Goodrich, and I have Councilperson Mutchler, and I have Councilperson Watson.
Public hearing is closed, right?
We have closed the public hearing.
So we can have thoughts and opinions. Okay.
You can voice an opinion.
Did I hear right earlier the idea of the credit is for the off-site parking?
On-street parking.
I mean off-site.
Yes.
Street parking.
Yeah, street parking that they get the credit for. I am not in favor of that idea. I think we should get rid of that, and I like the idea of doing the one space for a studio and 1.5 for everything else. Therefore, I'd like to make a motion that we amend the proposal to studio with one with no credit for off. Or street parking, or however you want to do that.
Well, clarification, he's
You're moving to approve the proposal with those changes.
Yes.
Because you just said to move.
Yes.
You just went to amend.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what I meant.
I believe we were following what he meant.
Yes.
Okay. So further discussion on his amendment.
Second hasn't been seconded.
No one seconded.
I know. I'm waiting for a second.
Just double checking it. You want to make one per studio, 1.5 for everything else, but then clarify the second part, the third part.
Off street.
No credit given for using street parking toward that.
Okay.
So that part just gets eliminated. So if you're building a building, you have to provide your parking on there. You can't do like what Councilmember Olson says. I'm going to take these three spots, and then some other guy says, I want those same three spots for my development type of thing.
So one and then 1.5 per everything.
No. Yeah.
So is everyone clear on Councilperson Goodrich's proposal that does not have a second at this time? Okay, lacking a second, we are moving forward. Councilperson Mutchler?
I'm really close to what Councilmember Goodrich was doing, and had I got a second, I would have modified it a bit. And again, I might take time, I don't know if I need to go through my own experience with the Beacon Manor apartment. I don't really think we currently have a parking problem. And I think that I'd like to try something a little more aggressive and to see how it goes and to see a couple developments pop and see what happens. And if we find out, golly, we do have a problem, we can change this. So I'd like to see us go a little more aggressive as an experiment. We haven't seen anything in the downtown core in 30 years. So my motion, to agree with Goodrich, Councilmember Goodrich, I'd like to get rid of the credit idea. I think that's a burden to business. And my motion would be to go one parking spot for the studios and the one bedrooms, and then 1.5 for the two, and so on and so forth. No reference to credits, no reference to visitor parking.
Before we have a second, staff would like to respond.
I wanted to ask you a question. You said it's bad for business. I believe in Councilmember Goodrich's, he was focusing the credit on eliminating it only for residential, because we do provide that credit for commercial development.
We're only speaking of multifamily.
Okay.
Residential.
Okay. Is everyone clear on Councilperson Mutchler's proposal?
I'll second that.
Okay. So we have a motion to second discussion on his proposal and amendment. Councilperson Hansen first, Olson, then Mutchler.
I'm going to go from some personal experience. I have a 10-plex that has four units that have more than one person. So essentially I have six units that, even though they're two-bedroom, has one person in those units. Everyone owns a car. They are assigned parking places, and I don't have any problems until the five extra spots in the lot are filled. And then someone comes into the lot and there's no parking places except the ones that are assigned to a unit, and that's when you start having problems. That's when the landlord gets a call at 10 o'clock at night and says, I just came home from work and so-and-so's having a party in his apartment in my parking place. Would you please call them or go make sure that... So what and I've got 1.5 per unit on the two-bedroom situation that really is half two-bedroom and half one-bedroom because there's only one person living in those apartments. I don't think one per one-bedroom unit is enough. I think it should be 1.5, personally. That's one point. The second point is that if you go, I can agree with one per studio unit in the downtown core. I can't agree with not giving some sort of credit for street on-street parking, because if you don't, then that restricts the parking to 100%. So any studio that has an extra car has absolutely no place to put it, unless there's a unit there that where there's someone that doesn't have a car. Now, whether you assign the parking places or don't assign it, an eight-unit studio apartment complex. And I realize it would probably be mixed with one or two and three bedrooms. But if someone were to build a eight-unit studio apartment complex with eight parking places, there's no wiggle room whatsoever. Even the 1.25 makes sense, because then you would have two extra spots for the eight apartments. But with no extra spots, I just can't support that. I will support a one per studio if on-street parking can be taken into consideration. Excuse me. No, let me back that off. Yeah, because there has to be that extra space somewhere. If there's no on-street parking available, then you've got to have more than one per unit. That's where I'm coming from.
So next is Councilperson Olson. Councilperson Mutchler, but our clerk would like a clarification question
regarding that credit. So I understand it, the notes. Right now, the proposal was 2, but a 25% credit effectively getting us to 1.5. The motions in front of us are kind of slashing the credit and just doing flats, right? But if you add a credit back, wouldn't we need to be a little bit higher to get us back down to those rates?
Exactly.
The motion, as I understood it, was to remove the 25% credit for residential.
Not in my view was to not reference it, because you would then still have the street or the extra. It's just right there. We're not calculating it. It's there. We're not.
So you would continue to include
I'm assuming that occasionally people will park on the street, but I'm not calculating it in.
I'm getting confused then. So are.
I still have the motion as removing the credit for that reason, then.
Oh.
The motion was just not to even reference credit at all, not even deal with it.
This is pretty much precisely why staff is recommending what we're recommending and why we are still recommending it.
It's already in our code. And so if you don't reference it in your motion, it's going to remain in the code.
This
is why I'm asking my clarification question, because I'm a little bit lost as to you're going to keep the credit in, but now you're at one spot, they can still get the credit. Now we're at like 0.5 spots per unit.
Staff needs something to understand how to administer it, which is...
I apologize.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. I don't mind clarifying it.
This is a good time is we're going to take a 5-minute recess. Maybe we can have some private conversation, because we've always promised...
No.
Okay. We have some public conversation. But we've always promised to get the students out here by 8, so we're a little late. So we're going to take a 5-minute recess.
No, talking to the bathroom.
You know what you're talking about.
You say it's 1.5.
Okay, well, because that's where I was at first.
And we'll just assume that, in a practical sense, the off-site, on-street parking would simply be there as a safety zone.
But is that really what his motion says?
I got the impression that right now the staff is 2 with a credit to get to 1.5. He's saying... 1.5, no credit.
So it's the same effect for...
It's the same effect.
But we need to remove the credit from the language, because it's still in there.
Right. We would have to...
Remove the residential parking. Remove the residential parking.
You're thinking of the credit as a safety, though. For overflow parking on site.
I just don't want the debugger.
Right. So instead of a 2 with a credit to get to 1.5, you're saying 1.5.
Yes, because that would be the same effect. It would be consistent.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Are we going to talk about these things before we do motions? I know everybody's always in a hurry to get the motion, but if we could talk about it for a little bit, we get to the point where we could make a motion where we could go, as opposed to like,
I've been sitting with your dad at 1 in the morning.
Rosie, the only effective change is allowing one per student.
Yeah, good to see
that's
you.
That's really the only change to.
But that's not what he said. He said one per studio.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, good. I love it. Okay, good. This week, good for you?
I agree that's what.
Okay, let me give you a call tomorrow. Like, can you look at our schedules?
Sam, would it be? Do you want me to say as my?
Okay, we said we're approaching. We're getting close.
Here you go.
Have you guys got it straight?
So oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
we don't want to put up.
Okay, we're back in session. Where were we? We were waiting for... Did you finish your comment, or would you like to speak some more?
I'd like to speak some more and possibly ask Council Member Mutchler if I understand where he was going.
You may do that.
Okay. I believe that as proposed, there would be one space per studio and one space for one bedroom and 1.5 spaces for the others. What was unclear to me, but what I think would meet your expectations of what you wanted to do, was also recommending that the on-street parking credit be removed for residential. That way, for the developer, there would be consistent expectations of I need to create 1.5 spaces for 2, 3, 4, 5 bedrooms, and I need to create one space for studio and one bedroom. Overflow or addition would happen.
And exactly. And the reason for that, in my mind, was there's going to be some give and take. There's going to be visitors. But that's what the street is for. We require streets with parking. Our design standards require that. And I would just rather the developer not have to mess with that. I don't think they're telling us they don't want to mess with that. But we still have that available. Obviously, we think a quarter of the all apartments parking can be on the street. That's what we're saying here. A quarter of the whole thing. So that it exists for the mistakes we might make here, the lack of accuracy. But I still feel strongly that 1.5 for the rest, it would do the job.
If that is a proposal, then staff could administrate that. We'd leave it to council to decide if that's what they want.
Okay. Councilperson Hansen, Watson, and then Ink. Oh, I'm sorry. I was way behind. So I'm sorry. You were ignored before, so you get to jump to the...
I'm used to it.
Councilperson Olson, then it's Hansen, Watson, Ingram.
I'm not going to be able to support John's. We're close. I don't like the credits of selling the same parking spot 5 times, because then we're going to have a parade of business owners in here that we've sold the parking spot 5 times, and they didn't even get any credit for it. So that's got to go, in my opinion. I couldn't go down to 1.1. I could do the 1.5, and that's where I'm at.
Okay. Councilperson Hansen, Watson, Ingram. So Councilperson Hansen.
I think I'm coming back to Brent's original proposal, because I kind of was thinking backwards in terms of the credits. But if you put a one bedroom for a studio, and you give no credits, then there's a place for a visitor to park out on the street for a studio. Absolutely cannot accept one place for a one bedroom. Most one bedroom apartments have 2 people, or many do. I shouldn't say most. And when you have 2 people, you have the likelihood of 2 cars. And if you only allow one in an eightplex, one parking place per in an eightplex of 1 bedrooms, then what the situation you're going to have is if any one of those apartments has a second person, they've got to park on the street. If 2 of the apartments have 2 people with 2 cars, now you've used up all of their allotment of street parking. There's nothing for visitors. If 3 people have it, you've got more cars than you have available spots.
Okay, we have Councilperson Ingram, Watson, or Mutchler.
Go ahead, Paul.
Sorry. I thought it was him.
No, I'm changing.
Oh, you're changing.
No, I was.
It's good to be the king.
Basically, going to say what Mel just said. So it's like one bedroom apartments tend to be a starter apartment for families. You've got a newlywed couple in there. Guess what? They both got cars. For the most part, I would say probably 85 to 90% of them would both have cars because they both got a job and they're usually at opposite ends of the county. So a one-bedroom, I couldn't go for one space for a one-bedroom. I could go for one space for a studio, one and a half for everything else.
Councilperson Watson?
Which is where I am as well. I can one spot for a studio, but one and a half for everything and above.
That's what I proposed.
That's and that's what he proposed.
Yeah, well, he never got
you get a second.
I'll tell you, though, the reason I didn't think that John's motion had anything to do with street credit. And so that's what I thought the difference was. I thought you wanted to get rid of the credit and that you wanted to keep the credit, which is the only reason I went with what you wanted to do, because I thought you wanted to keep the street credit.
But
and so now I am discovering that we don't want to keep the street credit. And apparently, I know we're not Boat County, but apparently we're not going to keep street credit. So do we want to, at this point, amend the motion to go to one spot per studio and one and a half spots for all above?
You
I can't really say. Okay, I would like to amend.
You have the power to amend.
I have the power.
Right now you have the floor.
Okay. I would like to amend the motion to make it 1.5 spots for all above. For all everything above. One bedroom and above.
Oh, not studio.
No. It would stay the same for the one for the studio, but everything above that, one bedroom and above, would be 1.5, and everything else would remain the same.
I'll second that.
And with no credits.
No credits.
No credits.
And no credits.
And no credits.
No credits.
Okay. So discussion on her amendment.
Yeah, I'm going to try really hard on this to see if we can get a little tighter. I'm just going to reference the apartments that I looked at this week, and the Beacon Manor apartments, again, 52 units. They have 74 parking spots and one street parking spot. There's no other street parking near this place. I went out in the middle of the night last night. Pardon? There's one parking spot. There's no place else to park on the street.
Is this downtown?
This is at the corner of Imhoff and Douglas.
Yeah, but I mean, is it in the area we're discussing?
This is in the rural, the urban residential zone. This is one of the zones we're talking about here.
Okay.
This is part of the area.
You're correct. It's outside of the downtown.
Okay.
But anyway, my point is I just wanted to find out what people are really doing in a development that was of significant size. So, I mean, I grant Councilmember Hansen, when you have a smaller situation, you get impacted by it and doesn't quite average out the same. But, again, 52 units, and they have 74 parking spots in the development. I counted them twice. And they have one parking spot on the street, and there's no other parking. This place is full. The website I went to today, it's full. I confirmed it with the people that run it. They have a waiting list to get in there. And what was notable to me is there are no studios, and there are no single bedrooms. This is all 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms. And at that, when are people most likely to be at home? So about 1 o'clock this morning, I counted 19 empty spots. Middle of the evening, there were 21 empty spots. Lunchtime today, there were 30 empty spots, illustrating what somebody else was saying. There are shift workers. People are kind of moving around. So they're only needing one parking spot per apartment that are 2, 3, and 4-bedroom apartments in realities that they're needing right now. That's all they're needing on a 24-hour basis, at least in this time frame where I don't think people are taking off right now. So I really think you can go with a tighter standard and that the 1.5, and that would be plenty of parking. So I would vote against the amendment for that reason.
And yet, if you watch what's happening on Main Street, where the old Hughes apartments have been converted all to 2 bedrooms, those people are now parking on Main Street, not realizing that eventually they're going to have to go into the parking lot, because Main Street's not going to have any parking there. But during the construction now, they've been parking on Main Street. Most nights there's 5 or 6, and they have 2 spots per apartment because those originally were condos. So it depends on the demographics of who's living in the situation. It does not depend, you find all sorts of situations. John found one where there are vacancies. I can now show you one with 40, 50 apartments in there where they have no parking spaces available, and they have 2 assigned per unit.
In Ferndale?
In Ferndale. It's right up on Main Street, the old Hughes apartments. And if you drive by tonight, you'll find people parked out on the street because there's not enough parking in the complex at two per unit.
Councilperson Watson?
Mr. Burnett, I know we've made your night. Is this doable for staff, the amendment and the original motion? Is this something you can do? Looking at, someone brings you their plans, and they've got so many studios, so many ones, so many twos. Is this something you can put together? And I'm just wondering, if not having the street credit, how that's going to affect your calculations? Or
In all honesty, the street credit, as Mr. York said, it is difficult for the city staff if we don't use it all or nothing. What we had done is we'd said basically everybody gets 25% credit.
And this is just for multifamily homes. The commercial people will still have street credit. That's all we've done. I just want to clarify. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any more discussion on what would be
the amendment?
The amendment. Watson's amendment. Okay, would you read her amendment, and then we're going to go to the vote.
The amendment is to make it 1.5 spots for one bedroom and more, and to remove the 25% credit for residential multifamily.
The one spot per studio still stays.
That is in the original motion,
yes,
and so I'm only reading what you...
No, that's correct. I would just like to be sure.
This will change the main motion, which will have one unit per studio per motion.
But if this passes and that doesn't, what happens to the one?
It stays. She's only changing the portion of the original motion for one bedrooms and more. She retains the one parking spot per studio.
So
she's just amending
the
main motion.
If this passes and the next one doesn't, then it's done.
Then we're back to square one.
If this passes, then the new motion will be one parking spot per studio, 1.5 spots per one or more, and no 25% credit for residential multifamily.
That would be what John's is altered to?
Yes.
Okay.
It would be Brent, back at Brent's motion.
It's back at Brent's motion.
Not in a second. Brent.
Pioneer.
Okay, so on this amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay. Motion carries 6-1 with Councilperson Mutchler opposed. Now, to the main amended motion. Everyone understand where that one is? I think you do. Good job. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
With apologies to...
No, I said aye.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But
I didn't hear that.
Motion carries 7-0. Councilperson Mutch.
I'd like to ask council if they would consider directing staff to making this change in the other multifamily zones. We have an RO 1.5 and a RM zone that have a higher parking requirement than this.
We could request a future public hearing on that.
Yes, exactly. Because we don't want to have a higher standard out there than we have down here. That just makes no sense. So,
We can take it through the process.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, he'll come to planning committee.
All right. Okay, council. Great discussion. Good job. That really was.
I thank the public for coming too.
Yeah. Good job.
Thank you for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.
We're not done yet. We have a budget now.
You don't want to know about our committee assignments?
I want you guys to go build some studios. Bring it up. Okay, council committee liaison assignments. We basically review assignments. Any discussion on those assignments?
I'm happy.
Okay. I have a request to change the liaison from Parks Board.
Okay. What do you want from us?
Who wants to do
it? Is there council interest in changing?
Is there council interest in changing liaison Parks Board? Councilperson Zimmerman.
Yeah, that was me. I agree. I mean, to spend $600 a year to pay me to sit on a committee that has zero money, I just, they're all nice people, but I think that the mayor's there, and it's redundant to have us both there, so if there's someone that could do it, that'd be great.
Well, but I would not mind doing it, but I think I'd have a huge conflict of interest.
Because?
Veterans Memorial Park. Well, that's I'm on the board of directors of Veterans Memorial Park.
That's going
to be. You're not voting on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's just advisory.
Just liaison.
You're just there.
Attending meetings and sitting there.
Yeah.
Well, I also. What night do they meet?
I yielded the position a year ago to Lloyd because Lloyd had requested it.
Mm-hmm.
Would like to have it back.
Okay.
Okay.
I nominate Mel.
I second.
No second required for a nominee of a liaison.
Come in a second.
You got arm wrestling.
Parliamentary just
letting
you vote,
I support that, Mel.
If nobody has an objection, we could approve it by general consent.
No objection?
Yep.
No. Okay, approved. Moving on.
Okay, mayor reports. Susan Dale Benny, our new congressperson, is coming to Ferndale and requesting of you that any issues you'd like for me to share with our new congressperson, please get them to me before Wednesday afternoon. Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
Sales tax point of delivery.
What's that?
Sales tax point of delivery.
Like the internet?
You don't like it?
Hmm? No, I don't.
Go back the old way?
Yes.
Sales.
Good one. Any more?
We lose enough sales tax.
If you think of them, she's coming to City Hall at 4:15.
Gas tax send back.
4:15 Wednesday if you want to stop.
Give us our gas tax back.
Okay.
What's the problem?
Wait.
Well,
I was invited to it.
She's been talking with
me. Sincerely,
Dale Benny is a member of Congress.
That's okay. She can still put pressure on the state to give us our gas tax.
No, she can't.
She can put pressure on the Fed. Make sure we get all of her
state
federal
legislature
tax.
Doesn't care.
Well, whatever.
Oh, then she's got nothing to do with sales.
Okay, anyway, moving on. Christmas lights this Saturday. Is it 9 or 8?
8.
8 o'clock this Saturday. Chamber banquet. Like to see council representation there next Thursday.
What next Thursday?
Hmm?
Next 17th?
17th.
Oh, yeah. Same night as Parks, Recs, and Trails committee meeting.
Yes.
Would you like to go in my place?
No. You can come to the banquet too. They can get along with us for one night.
It's a tough one. I'm gonna have to have Yori step in and help me out that night. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sam will come with you because you can meet.
We got this little thing you could wear. Cool.
Actually, they've requested maintenance, public works and maintenance. To come
hey, Yori.
There you go.
If you go to Parks to have
somebody unlocks the door.
Yeah, let's wear the Grinch.
Okay, council reports.
Hmm? Let's wear the Grinch hat.
Council reports. Councilperson Watson, first hand up.
Just wanted to thank Village 66 for giving $25,000 to the library. And also, they've raised more than $11,000 in individual donations since the beginning of December, which turns into $22,000 with the doubling. So the library is making.
So they're at 36 times 2 now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So it's coming in. And they may have a grant in the offing, a small grant, but it's going to get doubled, so it all starts to add up. Oh, and if you are going to, some of the older folks. If you know anybody over 70 who's going to be forced to take an IRA, someone who takes the bus in our pathetic system.
Talk louder.
Good one, Gary.
What's your point?
I'm saying.
The fiscal cliff. Didn't you hear about it?
Well, I heard about the fiscal cliff. What's that got to do with my IRA money that I count on to live?
Never mind. If you know someone who has so much IRA money, they don't know what to do with it, you can give it to them.
IRA consists of $22,000 total.
Wow.
You take the RDM of that, it's only about
$6,700. Well, this doesn't apply to you then. I'll find some rich
money.
People to discuss.
Are you done now?
I am. Goodness
thinking
gracious.
Into the abyss. Any more council reports? Councilperson.
Excuse me.
Well, the Ferndale Double Dome Group, which I'll put together on the 21st of December, we've taken the majority of the money that we've raised and we've turned it over to the Whatcom Community Foundation. And then my wife and I wrote a nice little check to start there's two funds. There's capital funds and endowment funds. So I think we put the majority of the money in the endowment and then we started the capital funds. So that's out of my greedy little beer-drinking fingers.
How do you do that? So someone has given you money for a pool.
It's, well, we were a 501c3, and then we raised the money. It was in WeQ, and we just went ahead and put it over to them so they have it. And
the foundation will manage it.
It's foundation management. They get 3% per year to manage it, but They're all above board. It's great. Great work.
3%.
Oh, and the other item I wanted to make public was that I've been on the council. This will be my 6th year. This will be my final year, and I will not be seeking re-election. So if you know someone that wants to run, encourage it. That it's clear sailing for someone.
Can I run for a seat? It's a lot nicer seat.
I don't know. I gave you the good
We have this discussion. Some of us want to step that side, but we can.
Because you're also up for re-election, you can run for any one of the seats you'd like.
That's true.
Yeah. You could.
You know,
yeah.
There's no restrictions.
There's
we don't have courts.
Yeah, you could.
Can there
you
ask go. Ken Downey how to do that.
Yeah.
Councilperson Ingram.
Well, I just wanted to let everybody know that thanks to the Whatcom 7 Fire District who really... I think we shamed them into it, saying, you guys have got so much of our money, get your butts out here and go to work. The city Christmas tree got undecorated and unceremoniously chainsawed to the ground. and Public Works guys have already got the tree stand gone and the little brass thingies back in place, and the fountain looks back to normal now. It just gets warmer weather and starts the fountain.
There you go. Good job. Thank you. Okay, any more council reports? Okay, seeing none. Staff reports. Finance director.
Nothing.
City manager. Administrator.
Nothing.
Whatever
Welcome
you call back. It. Community development director.
Nothing.
Clerk.
Go Seahawks. I moved to Ferndale.
What?
I have a complaint about water.
Did you see?
Email me everyone else. Though.
Did you see his Como TV thing?
I read it. I didn't need to see it.
Oh, okay. Our water's like sucking on rocks.
Oh. I sucked on rocks.
Chalky.
That wasn't actually accurate.
Chalky
I sucked
and
on rocks.
I should point that out.
I think
here.
We need to do media training.
I was going to talk more about it, but I'll lay off. I've talked about it before regarding the electromagnetivity of the water. I found an item. I'm going to be applying it to my own home, see how it works, and we'll probably do a follow-up story with the paper. So.
Okay. Public Works. Police.
Wake up.
Nothing.
Are you still with us, Chief?
Yeah. Okay. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All in favor, we're...